from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Will there be a new relationship between small states and big international bodies? Barbadian leader sets out the blueprint in London. Trinidad and Tobago set for a 70s-style economic boom with a natural gas find. And is Dwight Yorke getting special treatment? I'm Orin Gordon, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. A conference on the problems facing the world's small, poor countries has ended in London. The World Bank and the Commonwealth Secretariat held a meeting that will lead to a detailed report on the problems of small states, from the effect of globalization, unrestricted free trade on their economies, to the threat to their survival by global warming and natural disasters. It's hoped that down the road it will form the blueprint for these countries' interaction with bodies like the IMF and the World Trade Organization. The Barbadian Prime Minister Owen Arthur chaired the London meeting. At a news briefing near Westminster earlier today, he spelt out precisely what the conference aimed to do.
The World Bank and the Commonwealth Secretariat have been involved in the endeavor to put together a report on small states that appropriately capture the dimensions of their vulnerability, their volatility, as considerations that can affect their capacity to function in a new global society, and also to prepare a report that allows a new policy framework to be defined and accepted by the international community that can trigger an agenda of actions that the international community and small states themselves can adopt and pursue that would enable them to better integrate into the new global society and overcome their long-standing problems of vulnerability.
Part one of the report to which Mr. Arthur referred is already complete. It sets out the problems of small states. Mr. Arthur spoke of the four main areas of concern.
How to reduce vulnerability, how to integrate small states better into the world trading system, how to build capacity in the small states at the domestic level and at the regional level to overcome their vulnerability, how to put in place systems to enable them to respond to the opportunities of globalization. Those four major matters were considered at this conference based upon papers presented both by the small states and by representatives of the international institutions.
Barbadian Prime Minister Owen Arthur. And developing countries have had their say at the UNCTAD Trade Conference, which they've again used to express their disappointment with developed countries on matters of trade. But it may take a while to find out whether the arguments there actually make a difference in the way trade is conducted internationally. Rukmin Maharaj has been looking at the issue.
The UNCTAD conference in Bangkok did not emerge as a forum for making difficult commitments to open markets to competition from imports. But the developing countries and non-governmental organizations didn't hesitate to make the case there for fair trade, urging the rich countries to back their rhetoric for free trade by opening up their own markets. However, on some of the issues that matter most to developing countries, a draft document with proposed action fell well short of what the smaller nations would like. The draft plan says barriers to their exports in key industries need to be addressed, but there's no promise that they will be removed. Whether advice directed at reversing what many developing countries see as the existing imbalance in trade will be heeded also remains unclear. One example is a call by British charity Christian Aid that international agreements should be binding on private business as well as governments. According to Christian Aid, this must be done if the poor and weak are to be protected in an increasingly globalized world. Christian Aid also wants monopolies controlled and restrictive business practices regulated at global level. NGOs and developing countries may have a long wait over whether concrete action is ever taken on this at the level of an institution like the World Trade Organization.
That report was by Rukmin Maharaj. Natural gas is quickly replacing crude oil as the mainstay of the Trinidad and Tobago economy. The Ministry of Energy is claiming that with it, there'll be an explosion in foreign direct investment. Known gas reserves stretch into the next 25 years, and new finds are constantly being made. Tony Fraser reports on what seems to be another economic boom in the making.
After much contention, the government last week signed an agreement with Atlantic LNG to construct two new gas plants at a cost of US$1.2 billion. It's the single greatest investment ever made here. The gas is used as base material for the production of methanol and other petrochemicals. In the deal, the government will receive $5 billion in tax revenues, or $30 billion over 20 years. One of the concerns raised by those who opposed the deal was that it could leave the country without its own supplies of cooking gas and without sufficient natural gas to produce electricity. Energy Minister Finbar Ganga said that at today's calculations, there's sufficient gas for the next 25 years. Also, the minister announced that another foreign company last week found a well with an estimated 800 billion cubic feet of gas. One energy expert has advised Energy Minister Finbar Ganga to have the government establish a savings fund to secure a portion of the gas windfall.
Natural gas or any fossil fuel, whether it be gas or oil or coal, is a depleting resource and it's not going to last forever. And I think that it makes very good sense that if we could put aside half of that revenue, $1.5 billion is 10% of the national budget.
The energy minister says the country has cornered the natural gas market in this hemisphere and is already looking at the prospect of establishing two other natural gas plants. Tony Fraser in Port of Spain for BBC Caribbean Report.
Grenada is restating its opposition to moves by the St. Lucia Banana Corporation to sell bananas directly to Geest, the exporting company. Grenada's Agriculture Minister Clarice Charles has said in St. Lucia that the move would divide the Windward Islands. Pete Ninval reports.
The Grenada Agriculture Minister, who was in St. Lucia for a sub-regional conference on pesticide and toxic waste, believes in a unified approach to bananas in the Windward Islands. Ms. Clarice Charles says the move by the SLBC to sell its fruit directly to Geest will divide the islands and hurt St. Lucia the most. The Grenada Agriculture Minister did not feel her island was out of place as the smallest banana producer in the Windwards to join with St. Vincent and the Grenadines in suggesting that the time had come for consideration to be given to relocating WIPDECO's headquarters from St. Lucia as a result of the SLBC's actions. This is Pete Ninval in Castries, St. Lucia for BBC Caribbean Report.
The Guyana government is insisting that it does carry out full and speedy inquests whenever someone is shot and killed by the police. This comes as officers face more criticism of what opponents have called their shoot-to-kill policy. There's controversy over the killing of the country's most wanted man, Lyndon London, who some eyewitnesses say was shot despite surrendering to the police. His funeral Wednesday turned into something of a demonstration against police tactics, a protest that got the backing of the opposition People's National Congress. Colin Smith reports.
One local group has documented 29 of what they call questionable deaths, which have taken place at the hands of the police. Mr. Oscar Clark, the General Secretary of the main opposition, the People's National Congress, today told BBC Caribbean Report that it is an issue which his party is very concerned about.
My presence here is really to emphasize this important, that we, what we attach to this question of police killings and, you know, extrajudicial killings that's happening in the country. And it is wrong. It is wrong. We are against it. The government should do something about it.
The questions of excessive use of force by the police last week and in general dominated a press conference held this morning by the head of the Presidential Secretariat, Dr. Roger Luncheon. He maintained, however, that all of the normal procedures are followed when someone is shot and killed by the police.
Those initiatives taken to ensure that these allegations or the specific allegations are dealt with thoroughly, and that the standard practices are put in place, namely the investigations, the resort to the law, the coroners, for their own inputs.
In spite of Dr. Lunton's claim, coroners' inquests into police killings are rare. Some analysts feel that poor pay, training and resources have brought the efficiency of the police force and its prosecuting arm to a very low ebb. Therefore, when they feel they have the upper hand on a criminal, there is a strong temptation to conclude the matter as quickly as possible. a major injection of funds and personnel into the police force would certainly go down now as one of their more urgent needs. Colin Smith in Georgetown, Guyana for BBC Caribbean Report.
In a sharp turnaround, the American labor movement is calling for a blanket amnesty for illegal immigrants that previously accused of forcing down wages and breaking strikes. In its annual general meeting in New Orleans, the FL-CIO Workers Federation announced that it planned to pressure Congress to pass an amnesty law. Leslie Goff reports.
The AFL-CIO call for a blanket amnesty for illegal immigrants comes as a big surprise, as it was only a few years ago that the Workers' Federation helped pass legislation which penalized employers who hired illegal immigrants. The sanctions, for the most part, failed to keep illegal immigrants out of the labor market and ended up losing the AFL-CIO possible members among blacks and Hispanics. And now, with union membership in the United States only a fraction of what it was a generation ago, the American labor movement is desperate to find new members among the 6 million illegal immigrants in the United States. Business, too, desperately short of workers, also wants an amnesty, as do many politicians like Democratic Congressman Major Owens.
In certain areas, we have an employment crisis that people are not available for jobs. And if people are here already, maybe illegally, they should be given some opportunity to become legal.
And should a blanket amnesty law be passed, it'll benefit people like 19-year-old Jamaican-born Claudette, who grew up in the United States but didn't discover until her grandmother told her recently that she was an illegal immigrant.
She didn't tell me anything. It's just like one day I was like, Dad, when am I going to be able to get a job? And she's like, you can't get a job. You don't have no green card. You can't get a job. You don't have no papers. When you start getting to a teenager, you really want to know, you know, you want to work and get some money in your pocket. It's not that easy.
Now that American labor has done a dramatic turnabout on illegal immigrants, it seems likely that Congress will eventually follow suit and likely pass an amnesty measure of some kind in the near future. For BBC Caribbean Report, this is Leslie Goff in New York.
Finally, football. Trinidad and Tobago have made it into the quarterfinal of the CONCACAF Gold Cup in the United States. But one of their star players, Dwight York, will miss the match. He's flown back to England to help his club Manchester United in their top-of-the-table clash with Leeds United. If TT progresses any further, York will be back to take part in the semi-finals or even the finals. Some of his teammates are unhappy with that deal. In a side already brimming with international attacking talent, York has become something of an automatic selection for Man U. Once a player establishes himself in the Tobagonian's absence, it could mean a long spell warming the bench. It's also the time of year in which the teams need their full squads. The BBC's Martin Fuchs reports for us on the club versus country dilemma.
Nothing better illustrates the conflict between FIFA and Europe's most powerful football clubs than the case of Dwight York. By FIFA rules, he should have been available to Trinidad and Tobago this weekend in what is, after all, a continental championship, a quarter-final of the CONCACAF Gold Cup. But Trinidad don't pay York's wages. Manchester United do, and the cost to them is huge, as it is with all Premiership players of such ability. United are English champions, European champions, the richest club in the world, we're told. They want York for their top-of-the-table clash with Leeds on Sunday, and they're getting their way. Quite why is not entirely clear. Oliver Camps, the president of Trinidad's Football Federation, says an agreement was made before the championship that York would be available for United's match against Leeds. He says Trinidad's relationship with Manchester United is good, and with World Cup qualifiers in mind, he wants to keep it that way. But whether it's the World Cup or the Gold Cup, the same FIFA rules apply. Trinidad have first call on their international players. And while maintaining good relations with Manchester United is important, surely it is more important to give your country the best chance it can get in whatever competition. The real lever that clubs like United have in these situations is that they decide on the fitness of an international player. If a club says a player isn't fit, by and large, his country has to accept it. Perhaps by playing ball with Manchester United this week, Trinidad have ensured that Dwight York's fitness won't be in doubt come the World Cup qualifiers. That can be their only motive in releasing him. The trouble is that the price could be a quarter-final defeat in the Gold Cup against Costa Rica. Trinidad could win without him and then have York back in the United States for the semi-finals, but I don't suppose Sir Alex Ferguson would bet on it.
That report was by Martin Fuchs. Before we go, here are the top stories making BBC Caribbean report. There could be a new relationship between small states and big international bodies. The Barbadian leader Owen Arthur has sent out the blueprint in London. And Trinidad and Tobago looks set for a 70s-style economic boom with a natural gas find. That will do it for this edition of BBC Caribbean Report. This is Aaron Gordon saying goodbye from London.